to Pushing Buttons, part of the Geek Freaks Network. My name is Kyle.
And I'm Frank.
And Frank is back, and Kevin's still MIA. He's taking some personal leave, so hopefully he has some great
He's MIA for a good reason. It's Ashley's birthday, so if he actually showed up for recording, he'd get his ass kicked.
Happy birthday to Ashley. Thank you supporting Kevin and our podcasting endeavors. It's always been a pleasure working with him. I miss recording with him. I hope he comes back soon.
I feel like it's like when, you know, like you go to your friend's house, whatever, you knock at the door. Can Kevin come out and play? Can Kevin come record a podcast? That's awesome though. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you and hope you have fun. And today, I figured since, you know, we're releasing a few days before Halloween.
Yep.
What better time to talk about my favorite genre of games, horror games.
Your favorite genre of games? I did not know that.
It is.
Okay.
It is. Interesting.
Yeah. And, I'm pretty light on the genre myself. So to give everybody an idea of where I'm standing, a few horror games, but not like I don't seek them out regularly.
Yeah. That's kind of why I wanted to talk about it, because I feel like in particular, my social circle, I'm the only one with really any kind of experience playing horror games. Mm-hmm. And I can't really talk about them or share them with anybody. So that's why I'm kind of being a little self-indulgent today.
Heck yeah.
I want to take some time and just show some appreciation or love.
We're taking 3 weeks to talk about horror movies on Geek Freaks because I love horror movies. So I have no judgment. That's perfect.
So real quick, I know we talked about this off camera, off podcasting.
Off mic, yeah.
What are your plans? What are your traditional plans for Halloween? What do you like to do the most?
I like to save scary movies for Halloween. Some of the newer ones, you know, like this one's going to be the new Halloween movie. I'm also going to watch Werewolf by Night. Both those are going to be watched that night. I live out in the country, so I don't get a lot of trick-or-treaters, but I do like to make sure that I have the biggest, fattest candy bars for those who do show up. And my parents said that they want to come over and watch scary movies with us. So I'm like, that's cool. You know, sure. So I got my parents now coming over to watch scary movies too. So now I got to make something good for dinner. I don't know. Maybe we'll do taco night. I think taco night's on. That'll work perfect. Yeah. What about you? What are your plans on Halloween?
See, I've become more of a recluse lately, which, you know, given my circumstances, it's kind of hard to branch out.
Your circumstance, which is cyberpunk addiction, by the way.
Well, that and Marvel Snap. Like, holy crap, that game is fun.
Yeah.
I don't know if you checked it out yet, but I recommend it. It's really cool. And, you know, I tend to be more introverted than extroverted. So I like to, you know, to my wife's detriment, as she points out to me all the time, I like to play video games much more than I like to admit. And, you know, horror games in particular, that requires a lot of preconditions, I guess, to enjoy appropriately. Like, you know, being alone in a dark room, headphones on. It's a very solo-driven venture. And I just really enjoy that isolation I feel from it.
Yeah, it is. It leaves you alone because the game almost demands. We're going to talk about some of the things that make for a good horror game. And one of them is atmosphere. And I think you kind of want to set that up too. Like if you play at night, same thing for a movie. It's like shut the lights out, get some popcorn, and you really want good sound. Same thing for video games, right? For horror games specifically. So that's perfect.
Yeah, the reason why I prefer horror gaming over watching movies, I just feel like there's more elements to gaming that work better as a whole unit, like a whole cohesive unit.
Yeah.
I think it, for me anyway, I feel more immersed into the story.
Yeah.
Into the environment, into the gameplay.
And that's true for all games, really, right? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've told people, like, if you like this story from whatever game or you like whatever story, imagine playing as an assassin in the middle of Florence, Italy, trying to survive. You're the only person, you know, that you could trust. And you're on these rooftops, like the story, because you're part of it. Then when you see it on camera, you're like, well, yeah, he's climbing on roofs and he's jumping down and killing people. It's not the same, you know, that barely escaping element. And then again, with horror, with the survival stuff, it's all ramped up. You know.
Yeah, there's a lot of good examples of this. I feel like you could really pull out any game from the genre and everyone would have, you know, a personal experience tied to it.
Yeah.
You know, because I think one of the most relatable things about horror gaming is that it takes the ordinary that you're familiar with and it kind of, I can't think of the word, it kind of like transfixes it, if that's correct.
It makes sense.
Into,
<man.
laughs> into
you're busting out those $5 words, man. That's okay. Yeah, that's all right. Transfixing it. I like it. That's fancy as hell.
Yeah, it just, you know, it makes the ordinary into the extraordinary, and it there makes those elements pop out more while still having like a familiarity to it.
Yeah. Let's bring in, so we have an article. I always like to make sure with pushing buttons, I like to have articles that are kind of like, you know, good tent poles and stuff for you guys to read along with us. And of course, it will be linked in the description. This was brought to you by Sportskeeda, and they have an article all about the five things that make for a good horror game. And one of them, which you just brought up, is, and it's the number one thing, is having an ordinary protagonist. Why do you think that's so important?
I think horror doesn't work unless there is something you can relate to. And a lot of the situations that you're faced with in horror, you can't relate to that. Like, there's no way you could unless you, you know, had a horrible life leading up to that point. But, you know, an ordinary character that you can follow and sort of self-insert as into the game.
Yeah.
That's very crucial to horror working as a genre.
Yeah, specifically they're calling out Silent Hill 2 here, but I think also Resident Evil, you're just like the small town cop, or, I mean, in, early on, it gets crazy later
on. Yeah, early in the series. Yeah,
you're right. but yeah, the idea, and that also goes for the movies as well, is the idea that you want to be jump scared, and if you are Superman, you're not going to be scared by zombies, you'll just smash them. So if you are an average person, you could see yourself leaving your job and being, you know, in a nearly empty parking lot and it's dark at night, and that creates tension and horror. Then you put that on screen or you put that in game, and then you add the other elements you need, that makes sense. But if you're already a little better, a really good example of this, and they talk about it actually, I think, on The Office, Die Hard 1 and 2 and 3 are fantastic. Die Hard 4 starts to suck bad because all of a sudden he's throwing motorcycles at helicopters. And it's like, man, when he was just a guy who, you know, forgot to bring his shoes with him in number one, that's when it's good. I think that's the case with horror as well.
Yeah, good point. I really feel like that is the key narrative, is having a protagonist to help tie down the element of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have that, then the game just gets way too unrealistic. And basically, the way they answer those situations, like how they confront them, it's not going to feel as impactful to the player. Because then, you know, as the player, you're thinking, well, gee, if, you know, Resident Evil is a good example of this. Like the first three games, even four to an extent, kinda, you have the protagonist. four, five, and six are where things kind of just don't get scary anymore.
Yeah.
But the first three games are really scary because, you know, it is grounded in that reality. And while you may not be a cop in real life, you still have the basic elements of a character that you can self-insert as, like, you know, managing resources, having to confront these terrible monsters with no experience whatsoever, just like these characters you're playing as. But as the games go on, these characters are like superhuman, and they have all this experience to deal with these problems, and it's not scary anymore.
You know, that really brings up a really good point. For Resident Evil 1, I maybe 2, you have a limited storage, so limited so that it's a detriment, and bullets are extremely hard to find. So we're going to talk about some survivability stuff later on, but for character wise, you know, when you see an action movie and they don't ever run out of bullets, it's unbelievable. But when you only have, you know, say 12 shots, and you got to be very careful about getting headshots or just like maybe circling around and hiding from a zombie is your best bet, that feels more real than just like unloading clips and then just magically they're refilled. So yeah, there's something about that.
There's nothing scarier than absolutely running out of resources and having to rely only on like a melee weapon or a knife.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of games that do this well. You know, Silent Hill in particular, they do have weapons as well, but there's moments where you have to rely only on your melee weapon. And these creatures, you know, they take quite a beating. You can really feel the impact of each swing as you're trying to survive for your life. It's a great thrill.
Yeah. Let's go on to our second one here. We have background score, which, you know, again, as a movie guy, I find this, you know, all the time. In video games, is there any notable score you can remember that's like, this made the game?
Oh, for sure. Silent Hill, in particular, has incredible music all throughout the franchise because of one person. That's Sakura Yamaoka. He's been the composer for every single Silent Hill game, as far as I know, since the series' first inception. And without that music, you wouldn't have that same feeling of dread as you're plunging deeper and deeper into the other place. I don't know the name of it.
Yeah.
The underground.
Yeah. And then, you know, if we're talking about other games, I'm going to go with BioShock. It's probably my most notable horror game, which I know a lot of people are like, that's not a horror game. It was to me. I was scared enough. And when you're walking around, you can hear the big daddies moan and then the pounding of their feet. Right away, everything's elevated. Boom. And it wasn't score. It's not necessarily music. It's just sound design. But I think it's part of what's making it. Yeah, so it's just so amazing. And then if you go to like some of the later BioShocks, you had that old timey music playing in the background, or like Fallout does this, where they have like old timey music. And for some reason, a song Joyous in the Day It Was Released today feels eerie, hollow, empty, and like the good times are over kind of thing. And you're no longer in your safety. That's creative and amazing. You know,
I love the recent trend, by the way, of taking popular songs and horror movies, taking that and remaking it to where it's like a creepy nursery rhyme or something.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Like the Ring Around the Posy type of thing. Then all of a sudden you'll like hear it twisted or something. Like, oh no.
Yeah. Some cool examples of that in gaming is Dead Space. They use childhood nursery rhymes and, you know, make that into a creepy marker effect for gameplay reasons. And also in The Evil Within 2, in the trailer for the game, they twisted Ordinary World by Duran Duran, which is one of my favorite songs. And they made it like totally effective in conveying the story of the character where he's, you know, leaving the ordinary world into a crazy nightmarish hellscape.
I think I've actually heard that separate and it was really well done. Like I heard it on one of my gaming playlists on Spotify. Yeah, that's it's amazing what they could do. It's creative, but man, it's just so freaking neat. You know what? I'm going to post one of our gamings because we use a lot of gaming playlists when we're streaming, which by the way, I'll also talk about the new streaming schedule at the end, but I'll post it in the description, guys. If you guys want to hear some like good creepy music to spooky up your Halloween, we got you.
Nice.
Next up, let's go to our next one here. We have Unpredictable Threats. Crucial. Is there a threat that's most iconic to you? Because I have one in mind that's like, oh man, it terrifies me and I haven't really played the game.
There's a lot in horror. Like, you know, I could think of many examples, but one of the clearest ones to me that was really effective was the Regenerator Necromorph in Dead Space.
Okay.
Because that thing, you can't kill it. And it chases you down until it rips you to shreds. And running away from that thing is terrifying.
Yeah.
Because every time I play it, I always dread that part of the game. Because I know I can't kill it until much later in the story. But it just relentlessly chases you down. And you can waste your ammo on it and dismember it. Put stasis on it so it slows down its regenerating ability. But it'll still get up and chase you if you don't hurry your ass up.
Yeah. I'm thinking Mr. X from Resident Evil 2. When that remake came out and just all the slew of clips and videos and stuff like that of people trying to find strategies to just kind of keep distance from him. I was like, oh man, every one of these clips is fear inducing. That's perfect. And it's exactly what, and then of course people were making him Thomas the Tank Engine, which is always fun. But yeah, that was, he's a really good one in my opinion. I think he's one of the best. Any others you could think of?
Well, speaking of Resident Evil, like Nemesis in Resident Evil 3, unfortunately, the remake didn't do him justice. I felt like Resident Evil 3 remake was a letdown in general. It wasn't a scary game at all. But in the original Resident Evil 3, he was a titan of, you know, killer pathogens. I don't know what I'm going with this.
Of killer proportions. There we go. There you go.
Exactly. There you go. You know, there's also, you know, all the enemies in Amnesia, the Dark Descent.
Yeah.
I feel like that was really effective at delivering a terrifying, dreadful chase experience. Especially with the, I don't know if you played it. There's like an invisible water monster and you hear its footsteps in the water chasing you as you're moving through the water. And it's really effective.
You know, I got to give it out to Alan Wake on that too, because Alan Wake, you feel like you're outnumbered the entire time and your main tool is a flashlight. And it feels like, you know, right. You're trying to shine the light on these guys and then you can. And so, you constantly feel surrounded and that is such a awful feeling that I enjoy while playing, right? It feels terrible, but I love it. Alan Wake 1 and 2, it's been in free on Epic a couple times, and they're probably a really good deal right now. We're going to have a video coming out soon that's going to be talking about some of the best gaming deals right now with all the Halloween stuff. These are must pickups. Please pick up Alan Wake 1 and 2. They're always like a couple bucks. Wait,
two? Alan Wake 2's not yet.
Our Alan Wake, was that American something?
American Nightmare.
Thank you. That one.
Yes. I haven't played that one yet. Is it good?
It's just like Alan Wake 1, in my opinion. To me, it felt like it was okay. I don't think I beat it, that's from fear. that's my problem, not the game's problem. I get too scared. I'm like, no, I'm going to go play Hello Kitty. Take me back to World of Warcraft.
Exactly. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Just to end that segment, I think having unpredictable threats is vital to the success of a horror game. Like, without them, there's no relief of tension because you're always dreading something, and they work effectively because they drain that player of that dread after conquering the threat. And that's what helps, you know, the player gain confidence in their ability to progress in the game.
And that continued stress too, just it hurts their psyche a little bit in a way that you want in a horror game. Next we have Atmosphere. Number 4 is Atmosphere. And, I got to go back to my BioShock on this because you're talking about Rapture in the first one and the second one, and talk about such a unique world where, again, suddenly you see like elements of like, oh, the heyday was not very long ago. Everything was gold, but now it's fatinaed. And then you have things where it's just like, oh, this was like a nursery. And then you're like, oh, then what happened with the kids? You start to let your mind wander. And it really kind of sets up this place where you're alone, except for all the worst nightmares in the world, and one man. And, freaking Andrew Ryan. But it's such a wonderful game in that way, and I think the Atmosphere is probably its most notable aspect, and that goes for each one of its iterations, and I hope for the next one that they're making right now, I hope they put that first as well.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think Atmosphere is really important in horror games because without it, you don't have that boundary where, you know, you see and you can perceive what is being the threat to you versus your imagination.
Yeah.
Conjuring up an image of what is, you know, trying to kill you.
Right.
And that's a huge distinction. Without that boundary, I feel like there's a lot of games that blur that line intentionally. Like, one of the biggest successes of this is The Fog in Silent Hill. And hear these monsters from far away, but you don't know what they look like. You don't know how they can attack you or how they'll approach you until you cross that boundary and face it. And I think that's really, you know, gameplay for a horror game in a nutshell. It's about you as the player confronting the horror yourself, confronting your fear.
Yeah.
And without that, you lose everything that makes up what a horror game is.
And for those listening that are like, are they going to talk about the new Silent Hill games? Yeah, we'll get to those. We keep using them as examples, and we'll talk about the new ones coming up. Any other examples of like excellent atmosphere in horror games?
I'm glad you asked this. I just finished playing Darkwood for the first time. This came out in 2017. This game does atmosphere extremely well. For those who aren't familiar, it's a top-down twin stick-like game where you control a character, and you have resource management, and you know there's a plot where you have to discover what's going on in this forest.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of characters you can interact with to gain supplies from or to do quests for. But the really exciting thing about it is it takes a 24 day-night cycle. And during the day, you go out and rummage, scavenge for supplies. But once it gets to nighttime, you have to go back and return to your shelter. And you have to fortify it versus unseen threats or monsters. And during this time, you have to use a generator to keep the lights on.
Oh, man.
And during the entire night period, lots of unseen creatures try to come into your base to kill you. And you have to manage resource management with lights, like fueling up the generator with gasoline to keep it going. And wow.
You describing this game is building up the tension and fear in me right now as we're talking about it.
Just as like, I'm talking about it, I'm getting like flashbacks
this.
To it.
Yeah, I don't like this at all.
It's very eldritch based. Like the creatures are grotesque and monstrous, yeah. and they can break down your door, even if you barricade it or your window. And you only have a limited amount of resources, so you have to really be mindful of what you're doing, and you have to set traps to capture them. And there's also like supernatural elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'll have like ghosts come in and turn off the lights, so you're exposed to the other dangers within the area.
Yeah,
it's a crazy good game. Like I can't believe I slept on it so long.
Shoot the name out one more time.
Delivers an atmosphere.
Let's get that name one more time. Wanna?
Yeah, it's called Darkwood by Acid Wizard Studios.
Darkwood. I'm gonna put a link to that because that was a really good ad you just did for that game. Really good review, actually.
I was really impressed by it. It's the scariest game I've played in years.
I'm scared just listening to you talk about it. The idea of trying to like manage resources and survive. No, thank you. yeah, that's. I'll make sure that's in the
incredible
description.
Atmosphere. It's a really good game. Like I think a lot of people don't know about it because of its premise. But if you love horror, you have to play it. It's incredible.
Hmm. Let's check it out. All right. Any other games you could think of that really build on this atmosphere idea? I think one of them I really like is Don't Starve and Don't Starve Together, which I've suggested for our community now, by the way. Their artistic style makes you think like, oh, this is a whimsical world. And then you're almost fooled. Once you start getting hit by that whimsical world, you're like, oh, nothing can be trusted. And so it's really trying to constantly throw you off with like, oh, how cool is this little like wolf look? Then there's the night where all the wolves attack and you're like, I was not ready for this, you know, and. I like how it's very Tim Burton-esque where it's like, oh, I'm enjoying this world. And then all of a sudden the world's attacking me. Yeah.
You know, in regards to atmosphere, you could, you know, really apply this to any sort of game, like even non-horror.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't consider Don't Starve a horror game, but I can see your point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the art style does contribute to the atmosphere of the game, which when I played it, you know, there were moments where I was terrified of things attacking me at night. It's kind of similar to Darkwood, actually.
Yeah, that's what you reminded me of. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a good game.
But as far as the games go, I think we've covered quite a bit.
Okay. Let's go to our number five, and that's Surviving Elements. We've already talked a little bit with Darkwood. Is there anything else you could think of that fits in this?
Well, you have the Resident Evil franchise, of course. All horror games really have resource management. I haven't played The Forest, but I've always wanted to, which we could also consider for Community Night.
Yeah, I played that one.
Is it good?
It is good, yeah. It's I didn't finish it yet, but I'd be up for playing that again.
Okay, cool. That'd be something we could consider. But, you know, there's a lot of... I think this is really in all video games, not particular to horror. But it's something you have to... consider.
Otherwise, it's God mode, right? Because then you take away any of the challenge. And then this kind of goes with that ordinary character thing as well, because an ordinary character wouldn't have infinite resources. So this kind of negates any of the threats to that. And it just increases tension, increases stress on the player, all those things that you want. Surviving elements is really vital. I think it's probably the first step you got to set up.
You know, this doesn't really apply to horror games, but one of my favorite examples of surviving elements is Fallout New Vegas, when you have to play on hardcore mode.
Yeah.
You have to manage your sleep level, your water level, you know, your hunger level. Like I can't think of a particular instance in horror gaming that utilizes that well.
Yeah.
But Fallout was an incredible game. Like I love the franchise a lot, and New Vegas in particular just made everything perfect for the Fallout formula.
I want to shout out a game. It's called Yuma Will Burn. I just played the demo for it, and it's developed by Ty Abbott, who we've interviewed on Geek Freaks interviews. And so he put out a demo, and he's asking people to play it to just kind of give him some feedback. But it has three survival aspects to it. So you have hope, hunger, and life. And your decisions and how you play the game will affect all three of those. So you're constantly being careful with the decisions you make because it'll take away life or something like that. And if one of them goes down, you're done. It's actually so hardcore that if you die in the game, it deletes your save files. It's that aggressive on you. So you have to be very careful with that. And I just really like the idea that like, not only do you have to like make sure you jump over this pit or be careful of clearly this whatever spike or something like that, but also the decisions you make in interacting with other characters in the game will also affect your survival. So you have to be very careful the way you talk, because you might piss somebody off enough to attack you. And that's adding something like, you know, maybe like a Fallout kind of has that too, where it's like, or Strange Worlds is where you might set somebody off and then all of a sudden you have an enemy in the world that you don't need. You don't need more enemies in a game like that, you know?
Yeah, it's really difficult, especially nowadays, because we see a lot of horror titles that capitalize more so on jump scares than psychological horror.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, they're great for what they are. You know, like one, 2 hour gameplay snippets, and, you know, there's a clear threat, unpredictable threat, I should say.
Yeah.
And, you know, the jump scare, like one of my favorite common games or modern games is the Five Nights at Freddy's. Like, oh, I know it's not popular.
Not
in regards to its gameplay.
It used to be real popular back then, but
but at the time it was really novel because you had a character. I'm strictly talking about the first two or three games.
I only played the first one, so yeah, that's all I'm thinking of too.
And it was really, really interesting and unique because it took such a novel idea from childhood, which is like, say, Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, yeah.
And it flipped that from ordinary to extraordinary with these walking, talking animatronics that can kill you.
Yeah.
And it developed such a great backstory to it over time. Mm-hmm. But now it's just way out there. It's ridiculous. But the first three games were incredible at the time.
It was doing basically everything we talked about, right? It set up this atmosphere where everything was dark around you. It's an ordinary security guard, and you resource manage it because you only have enough power or whatever it was to keep the doors closed for so long. It's really implementing everything we talked about here. And I don't remember the music, but I'm sure it was scary as well. But it was really, actually, I think it was like Chuck E. Cheese music. So far, I think.
Yes, I know it used more like droning background noise to terrify the player more so than music, but it was used effectively, like right before they're about to jump scare you. They play that little jingle at the end when their faces are lighting up and all that. Yeah, exactly. Like, I still haven't played them. I could only watch them because to me, that's just really one of my phobias.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like walking, talking animatronics. Like, I've never liked those as a kid.
Yeah, no. I can't imagine why they were ever popular. I mean, I like them in Disneyland, but I mean, that place is as bright and cheery as it can be. And even Haunted Mansion is a little bright and cheery. So, but yeah, I'm not necessarily a big fan of them. I will avoid them.
You know what? Let's dive into that. Like, what are you afraid of? Like, do you have any phobias?
Snakes. Snakes is my phobia.
Snakes on a plane? Can't watch it?
That's my scariest fucking movie. I've actually gone into hyperventilation watching it the first time. I've woken up from dreams with snakes in them, hyperventilating. I've got a real problem with snakes. That's actually a phobia of mine.
Yeah, for me, it's spiders. So movies like Arachnophobia or Eight-Legged Freaks.
Yeah.
Or even the giant spiders in Resident Evil 2 and 1. I just can't. That's not for me.
Have you played Satisfactory?
I have not, no.
Because they have There are, but you could turn on Arachnophobia mode, and everybody just does anyways because it's cool. And they replace all the spiders with like JPEGs of cats. Oh, so you just see like a weird JPEG of a cat running after you.
I saw that too in Grounded. They have an arachnophobia option select where you can just make it into a circle.
Yeah. No, watch out for the circle. Cool. Yeah. Pretty smart. I think it's a good time now to move on to Silent Hill, and Resident Evil just released a trailer too. Did you watch that Resident Evil trailer?
I did, yeah. This past week, we had the Silent Hill transmission. It was a whole series of announcements for the franchise, which we haven't had a game for, I think, since Downpour in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a decade, and lots of cool, exciting stuff I want to break down there. And then Capcom also, I think the day after, actually, on Thursday, they released a demo or a short gameplay trailer for Resident Evil 4 Remake.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, also looks really good.
So since we only have the one thing for Resident Evil 4, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I was really not sure why Capcom decided to remake 4 before Code Veronica, because Code Veronica really needs the remake more than anything else. But I'm starting to feel like Capcom is acknowledging that Code Veronica isn't necessarily canon to the series, because it always kind of felt like a spinoff. And before they showed off the first trailer, I was like skeptical of it. I'm like, why does it need a remake? It's a perfectly good game on its own. But now that I'm seeing how they're going about directing it, they're making it a darker version, because Resident Evil 4 originally was like an action romp.
Yeah.
It didn't necessarily feel scary. It had some scary elements to it. But Leon was such a powerhouse of a character. Like you said, like a super human, basically. So I'm actually really curious to see how willing they are to make the Resident Evil 4 remake into like a darker, more tense, scarier game. Because I didn't really get that from the initial Resident Evil 4.
Also, I believe they're adding some new combat abilities, making it a lot more skill-based, because I know there's like pairing and stuff like that that's being added to the game. They're adding a lot of things that I think is going to change the gameplay enough to where it feels almost like a new game for some players.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing they could do for it, actually, is make it to where it's sort of like a new experience for both new and old players. Mm-hmm. Because I've played Resident Evil 4 at this point, like maybe 5 or 6 times. Like, it's one of my all-time favorite games.
Yeah.
And for me, what's most exciting is the fact that they're transfixing this into into a scarier experience, like a darker overall experience.
Yeah, transfixing it. Let's move on to Silent Hill. You're a Silent Hill fan, right?
I am. I've played all the games. Yeah.
Okay. So Silent Hill 2 remake, is that the best one to remake?
You know, I don't necessarily feel like it is, mm-hmm. because the first one I think is in more need of a remake, but I can see their point of view. They know that Silent Hill 2 is overall the strongest game.
Yeah.
So I think with Team Bluebird making it, especially, you know, it's going to be something I walk into with trepidation. Mm-hmm. I feel like, in particular, the changes they've made to James, the character model, he doesn't feel as relatable as before. It's kind of hard to explain. Like, I feel like the new character model for James is not quite on point.
What do you know? Okay. It's hard to explain. Yeah. To me, he seems fine, but I haven't played the original. So that's why I am going to play this one though, for sure.
I think the main difference, I think, is how the character is portrayed in this remake. He's more depressed and more visually distraught.
Okay.
Whereas in the original Silent Hill 2, he kind of looks more like detached, like not as, I guess, it's hard to explain. Like, there's something wrong a little bit with the character, how he looks.
Okay.
Because if you played the game, you know that James has a lot of personal conflict within himself, but he doesn't show it because he's not aware of it. But in this remake, it looks like he is aware of it, which isn't, I feel, right for the story. But you'll see what I mean once you play it.
Yeah. One of the other things that that's been coming out about this game is the fact that it's going to be pretty heavy on your computer. So on the PCs, you need a 2080 to play on medium settings.
Yeah, it's rough.
That's pretty big.
It doesn't sound like they're optimizing it very well.
No. It's gorgeous, but you're going to have to pay for it. That's pretty intense.
Also lamenting the loss of the third-person camera angle.
Okay.
Like, overhead. Because, you know, there are a lot of unique camera angles in Silent Hill 2 that kind of distort the field of vision for the character. Mm-hmm. But having the camera over the shoulder, you know, it does a good job at immersing the player further into the character. But I feel like having that overhead camera kind of helps the player confront that terror a little bit more easily.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if they're trying to just make sure that the player is more, what would that be called? Like, immersed in their world, forcing them to use certain camera angles. I don't know. I'm excited for it. As somebody who hasn't played it before, I'm excited to get it.
I'm excited for you. It's an incredible story. Like, you have to experience it. It's really good.
Next, we have Silent Hill Townfall. It's being developed by No Code and Annapurna out of Glasgow. Each one of the games that are announced are different gameplay modes or different gameplay styles, but Townfall is the closest to the OG Silent Hill games.
Yeah, it's hard to say where this one's going to go.
Everything's in teaser mode right now. Yeah, it's pretty early on.
Yeah, it's teaser mode. I haven't played Stories Untold or Observation. I do own them, so I'll definitely be checking these out at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just not enough information to go off of.
Then we have Silent Hill Ascension. The key with this is it's going to be made by J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot. And it's going to be an interactive series, they're saying. It's going to be something a little bit new, where their tagline is the entire community shapes the canon of Silent Hill. So it might be something like we've been seeing with Netflix, where you play along with it. I think it's what I forget what that's called, but it might be something like that. I'm not too sure about it. J.J. Abrams involved, so it's definitely going to be something that's a little bit more filmed than video game.
Yeah, this sounds to me kind of like Black Mirror Bandersnatch.
I was trying to think of that name. Along.
Yeah, that's it. I don't know if... It sounds like they're going to do like a Let's Play of Silent Hill for like Twitch chat plays or something like that, which I don't know will work.
Well, I know Ubisoft tried to do something like that with Hyperspace, I think it was called, but it kind of flopped. But I think it's something that should be invested in and tried out more, because Twitch is a very big platform with a lot of interactivity. It's not just sit back and watch. You actually are interacting with the host. Come and interact with us guys. And I think this would be a really good use for it. I think that's a good move. I just want it to be enough gameplay, though. I don't want it to feel like you're just watching a movie.
Yeah, it just sounds to me like Twitch chat plays, where they vote on a majority decision, and then the events play out as the programmers or people directing the game intend them to be. And it doesn't sound like Silent Hill's a good fit for it, really.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see what happens. It's too early to tell so far.
Then we have Silent Hill F. This is done by Ruikishi 07. They're known, and this is going to be taking place in 1960s Japan. This creator is known for visual novels. I suspect this will be similar. It is a gorgeous looking teaser. It is amazing looking. So either way, I am excited for this one, just because I'm 1960s Japan. Let me know what's going on, you know?
Yeah, the trailer was gorgeous. I think this was absolutely the most exciting thing to come out of the Silent Hill transmission by far.
Mm-hmm.
I have played Higurashi and Umineko, their visual novels by Ryukishi 7. He's a great writer. He delivers incredible stories. And I think he'll be a good fit for Silent Hill. I do. I know a lot of people are kind of on the fence about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Silent Hill is a good fit. And, you know, what's interesting about this title is that it is set in 1960s Japan. Because all the Silent Hill games take place in the West.
Right.
And what makes Silent Hill so effective is that it takes a Western setting, but it incorporates Japanese horror. And that's what makes it so successful, like the formula for Silent Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be, you know, kind of waiting with bated breath to see how it'll work for Japanese horror in a Japanese setting. We've seen this countless times with other games, like Fatal Frame, for example. That
might be the problem, though, is it might get washed away with everything else we've seen. Yeah, you're right.
Right, it might be too familiar. Yeah.
Lastly, not fully a video game, and this is pushing buttons, but they are making a sequel to the 2006 Silent Hill movie. This one being called Return to Silent Hill, and they're bringing back the director, Christoph Gans. What are your thoughts on that?
I feel like Silent Hill, the movie, is one of the best adaptations we've ever gotten for a video game.
Oh, geez, aside from that's high praise.
Sonic. And, you know, for me, my bar is pretty low. Like, I consider the first Mortal Kombat movie a good adaptation.
Okay. I mean, hey, it was fun. We can always go with that.
It was a good movie.
Great soundtrack. That song?
Exactly.
Oh, man.
You know, I actually prefer it over the HBO Mortal Kombat from a couple years ago. And I feel like Christoph Gans did a terrific job with Silent Hill.
Mm-hmm.
He adapted the first game pretty well. Of course, this is in fact an adaptation of Silent Hill 2. So I think if anybody could do it, it's Christoph Gans. He's shown that he can do it.
Yeah.
And I think this is actually the third movie with the Silent Hill, because there was a second one, but I don't recall it very well.
They said this is a sequel, but it could be just because they're talking about it being the sequel game. I'm not sure.
But I think it looks, you know, promising. I think he'll do a good job.
All the trailers are on our website, guys. If you go to our website, we put all the trailers up there. So you guys can check those out there. And that should be fun to do. Anything else you want to talk about with horror gaming? What are some of the best horror games or anything like that?
Yeah, I think when it comes to remakes in general, that's what we're seeing a lot of now, aside from Callisto Protocol in almost a month, which I'm really excited for.
Yeah. We have Dead Space 2 that, I mean, that's further away, but that's a really good remake that everybody's excited for. You especially, you know.
I'm kind of not too sure if it'll turn out the way I wanted to. I watched the recent gameplay trailers that were released last week as well. And there is some issues with the animations for Isaac, but I think they'll nail the atmosphere of the Ishimura.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just a lot of remakes being made, which is, you know, great and all. I think a lot of these games do deserve remakes. But I do want to see more new IP. And we're seeing a lot of that more so on Steam, like indie developers, for example.
Yeah. And I, for some reason, I think like a lot of indie developers gravitate towards some horror games. And I think it's because you can hide a little bit in the darkness, right? You can hide some of the rough edges. And there's a lot of story to tell. And some of my favorite horror games have been indie games. Or I'll give you this one, guys. Hey, Epic gives a free game every Thursday. I've experienced Alan Wake and many other horror games through that program. And they're usually, sometimes there's a lot of smaller games, and I'm having a lot of fun with them. Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely been some really good indie horror games. Like this came out in the summer. It was called Mortuary Assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really effective at delivering a creepy atmosphere and jump scares in the right moments. Like, I feel like when it comes to jump scares, you have to be really precise with them.
Yeah.
You can't just throw them out all the time. Otherwise, the player will get, you know, not redundant with them, but you get kind of used to them.
Phasmophobia is probably considered an indie game for the size. And it was hugely popular. It's actually another game that I'm suggesting that we play on community night. Come check out our community nights, guys. You can actually play along with us. Doki. See, I've been waiting to finish Doki Doki.
Yeah.
And I see it's in the horror category. So now I have a feeling that ending's not going to be good. Oh no,
it's not.
I thought it was just a dating sim, and I keep like meaning to finish it. Everybody's like, you gotta finish it. Some of the other indies I've been checking out is Little Nightmares. I'm going to be buying Little Nightmares 2 soon, so I was like, let me finish up Little Nightmares 1. And, I mean, there's just so many good side-scrollers that are in this world where they play with shadows and stuff like that, and they implement everything we talked about earlier with the five different aspects. Pretty classic. Do you consider Doom horror games?
Well, Doom 3 kind of was, I think, a survival horror, but the rest of them, no. They're action games.
Yeah, that's fair. Doom 3 for sure.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of variety in horror. I feel like there's a good balance between action horror or psychological horror. Like, there's a lot of I just can't come up with the words today, Frank.
That's all right.
There's like a giant spectrum.
There we go.
Of different types of horror that you can choose to immerse yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for you, what are your favorite genres of horror? Do you have a particular one you like, or is it still something that's kind of out of your grasp?
I don't seek out horror games, is the problem. And so if I'm gonna play a horror game, like, I'm probably gonna play Callisto Protocol, I'm gonna play Dead Space. It's completely off of like a friend's recommendation. It's like, this is a game you must check out. And so, like, Dead Space and Callisto Protocol are probably from you, and others that I've played, Bioshock might be the only one, and it's one that's I'm most fond to. It's the only one where I just picked up because it was like, man, that looks cool. And I, at the time, I had pneumonia, so I had to like sit on the couch for a week and not move. It was pretty bad. So I was like, okay, let me play. Yeah, oh, what a great way to spend a week on a couch, you know, playing every little corner you can of Bioshock. yeah, and then I remember we talked about it before, but Bioshock 2, actually, I was sick during that too, and Jonathan played it, and I just watched him the whole time. Like, can you play Bioshock for me? I have to see what happens. So that's how we did that one. Oh man, that was fun. I don't know. What particular kind of horror do you like?
I feel like I swerve more towards action horror. Like,
yeah.
For me, what pulled me first into the genre was Resident Evil.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, we've seen, you know, that's not as scary as it used to be, but there's elements of horror within the game. And, you know, again, Dead Space, that's another example. Like, I played that in 2008 originally, and it just blew my mind. Like, it was so good.
Yeah.
And over time, I do feel like I'm starting to gravitate more towards the psychological stuff because I think it's more interesting. Right, right. There's just not enough of them. And, you know, for me, I feel like it's more of an interesting game design space because you have to consider the player's, you know, experience with horror games. If you make it too hard or too scary, you know, they're going to pull away from it. And you don't want that as a horror developer.
Yeah.
And action, that's much easier for the player because there's lots of games where you play a protagonist with a giant gun and you shoot things. So.
And it's too easy if you're going to make a game like that to slip from horror to action because you just make that gun a little too strong. Boom, you're in an action game. You know, you're Halo.
It's a very fine balance.
It really is. It is. Yeah.
Player power, I think, is the biggest detriment to horror. If you give too much power to the player, then they'll steamroll it and not think much of it. If you pull too far back on it, then you'll deter the player and they won't be interested in playing it.
I want to do a topic for another time on cheat codes because when you said player power, it reminded me of the cheat code for StarCraft.
I miss cheat codes.
Oh, man. As soon as you get your StarCraft, power overwhelming and it's God mode. Yep. Like, oh, man, I would type that. I would. You know how, like, as a kid, how fast I learned how to spell power overwhelming perfectly and how fast I could type that out? Boom, ready to go. Overwhelming. Let us know on Twitter, on social media, anywhere, Discord especially, what your favorite horror game is and suggest it for our community night. We are doing community night now once a month. And the last one was a lot of fun, getting the rust off again and everything like that. So it was a lot of fun. Anything else for this genre we want to talk about before we go into our stream schedule?
I did have a question for you.
Fire away.
All right. So is there a horror game that you tried playing, but just felt like you couldn't get into and maybe you want to get back into it?
Oh, what a great question. I don't know about
it. I know you mentioned Doki Doki.
Doki Doki is probably, because now I found out that's a horror game. I thought it was just a dating sim and everybody's like, you got to finish playing it. And I'm like, I mean, am I going to date this cute girl, that cute girl? I couldn't tell, you know, whatever. A horror game that I need to finish. You know, I don't know, because I think once I quit a horror game, I'm like, I don't need to finish that. That's how I usually, or I'll watch the walk, or I'll play the walkthroughs. Senua, I can't ever freaking beat that game, and I don't know if it's a horror game. I think it's more a little more action. The Whispers do feel very horror-esque.
It's a very psychological game. I could say you could classify it as a horror game.
Okay, then that one for sure. Observer, I didn't end up finishing that game. Probably wouldn't mind going back to that one.
Oh, I need to play that still. Yeah.
Yeah, free on Epic. One of these, it was at one point. But there are probably a couple outside of that. Cyberpunk is my number one game. I need to probably go back to at some point. And Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I got to go back to that as well. But those outside of horror. What about you? Is there anything that you? I don't think there's a lot for you. I think you finish games too. You finish games to the extreme. Yeah.
I mean, if there's certain franchises I need to go back and finish it, you could say Assassin's Creed's one of them. But as far as horror goes, I have to now play all the Bloober Team's games because they're remaking Silent Hill 2.
Yeah.
That includes like Layers of Fear 1 and 2 and Medium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, you did say you played the Medium. So why did you pull out of that one?
Boring as all hell, man. It was so boring.
It was boring?
Oh, so boring.
Oh, no.
Not scary at all. It was not scary at all.
Really?
Just boring.
Okay.
It's on Game Pass though, if you want to give it a shot. So, or you can watch my stream where I was dragging my head across the keyboard. Oh man.
Indeed. Yeah. There's a lot of games that I own that are horror based, but I just haven't gotten around to because I've always wanted to save them for Halloween. And
there you go.
Yeah. You know, hopefully now I can do so.
Oh, Alien Isolation too. I bought that one and I want to play.
Oh, that's so good.
I
want to
play that one. I watched somebody play that and I was like, oh, this game looks freaking awesome.
That game is something else. That's intense.
Yeah.
That game does really well for all the five aspects we talked about.
I'm looking at a list of horror games right now. You know what's on it that's silly is Roblox. The only horror aspect of that is having to deal with kids playing Roblox. That's the only thing that's scary about that game. It's too many kids.
Hey, Minecraft had some horror elements to it.
It does. And that's easily my favorite horror game if that's going to be considered horror. Because that's one of my favorite all-time games. That's a perfect game right there.
Just think of Minecraft as a pseudo Silent Hill where you go to the underworld or the netherworld.
My Silent Hill's in blocks, bro. Yeah. Oh, goodness. All right.
All good stuff. Good
this
stuff.
This is a good chat. I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know much about horror games, but then like diving into what makes a good horror game was really interesting. And then now you're looking out for those elements. And I think, you know, everybody enjoying Halloween right now. This is your Halloween weekend. Find a good horror game. And I'll be streaming horror games, I think, a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. So
looking forward to that if it happens.
On our new schedule, this is the new stream schedule, guys. We're streaming Monday mornings at 9 a.m. It's the morning show. It's going to be at 9 a.m. except for this week, but it'll be past this. But this week, I actually have an appointment, so I'll be streaming a little bit earlier than that. On Tuesday, 9 p.m., we're doing the night on Tuesday. Then on Friday, 9 p.m., and when we do have community nights, which is once a month, it'll be on that time as well. And then Saturday at 8 p.m. about, we're doing the podcast. We'll be streamed live, including this episode of Pushing Buttons was also streamed live. So we do the streams for all the podcasts as well now. So basically, video games 3 times a week and podcasts at least once. And then there's going to be sporadic ones. Sometimes, you know, you just got to do whatever. And we have charity stream starting in late November. It'll be the same time World of Warcraft launches. We're going to be doing a charity stream for that for the UC Davis Children's Hospital. So come join us.
Very cool. Yeah. Nice.
Yep, that's
excellent. Excellent. Looking forward to seeing more Twitch streams. It's always a great way to connect with the community.
Yeah.
Use also our Discord channel where you can join the Geek Freaks Network and interact with each of us, pardon me, individually.
Mm-hmm. I need to push that. I haven't been pushing the Discord much. I need to get back to that. I slacked on that part. I got to get back to the newsletter coming out. The reason I slacked on is because we got a newsletter coming out and I've been working on that. That'll nice. Yeah. Just also go to our Twitter to. And you'll see it's there. I explained it on the last Geek Freaks.
Yeah. And there's also some rumblings of maybe a change to the Pushing Buttons format in the future. We're looking at maybe releasing some more videos. We'll see what happens there.
Essentially, yeah. Like I think that's going to be a big focus is that we want to try to release more videos. We're doing more video game reviews. We're working with a company to get more keys to do video game reviews. Matter of fact, the one you just did for Darkwood, that's perfect. Like that small review right there. If you were a horror fan, you bought that game off of that review alone. Yes. And so we're going to be doing more of those like that. Just check out our YouTube channel. We're trying to spice up that YouTube channel a little bit, make it a little spicier. So that's what that's for. Yeah.
Spicy equals good.
Spicy is good.
All right. Thanks again for joining us. Again, I am Kyle.
And I'm Frank.
And this is Frank. And we will see you after Halloween. Hopefully we all survive the night.
Yeah.
And until then, adios. Have a good one.